Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Cricket Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cricket Podcast. When it's been another day with a lot of action over in India. Over 300 runs, 14 wickets, the whole of England's innings. India in a pretty commanding position and a heck of a lot to talk about, not least Jasprit Bumrah's magic spell either side of tea. I'm Jack Hope. I'm joined by Dan Weston today. How are you doing, Dan?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Jack. Yeah, good day. Good day's cricket. Enjoyed it today.
I think it's been pretty good. I mean, it leaves India in a pretty strong position. But in terms of how the match developed, it could have gone either way, I think, until the last couple of hours of play. So really engaging. Before we get into things, just a reminder to head over to the Cricket Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, wherever else to follow our socials. And if you like the show, why don't you consider signing up to Patreon? Patreon.com/thecricketpod with deals starting from just £4 a month. You can get access to a whole load of extra content. Now, I've realised, Dan, that there's no Max, and Max normally does the day summary, so I'm going to have to wing this one. We'll go back to the beginning of the day. England had India 336-6 overnight. On the podcast yesterday, we thought that was a pretty good position, but the general mood, particularly among India fans, I have to say, was that they were a little bit below par. They pressed on in the morning, but did lose regular wickets, with James Anderson taking the new ball and getting it to nibble around and cause quite a lot of trouble. Jaiswal notches his double ton, but India are unable to get over 400 runs, finishing at 396-6, which is still, I think, on balance, not too bad a score. In response, England came out, as they often do, with like they double parked the team bus and smashed their way up to 100, and it looked like they were properly in the game. Zach Crawley in full flow, notching just over 70 at a run a ball. However, things took a little bit of a turn after Crawley fell. Jasprit Bumrah came into the game in a big way, getting Joe Root to nick off to slip, yorking Ollie Pope with an absolute snorter of a delivery. Bairstow followed. A little bit after that, Koldeep came back into the attack, bowled Folks in kind of curious fashion before Bumrah returned to get to slide one under Stokes' bat and eventually wrap up the England tail. At that point, India's lead was about 144. I say about 144. I think it was 144 when the changeover happened. Might have been 142. And India were well in charge. Last 15 minutes of play, India have scored a few more runs. Jaiswal still looking good, and Rohit also looking ominous. Dan, first question for you. I think it's been India's day. How much of a good day has this been for India?
I think it's been a fantastic day for India. 336-6 overnight, put 60 on for the last four. Probably a touch disappointed with that, maybe. But reducing England from 114 for one to 253 all out, and then sticking another 28 on your score by close is a great day's work on a pitch which I don't think had quite as many demons actually as a lot of people would have expected. Bumrah, outstanding. I mean, talk about the Yorker on Pope was, I think, ball of the year, let alone ball of the day. I mean, you're going to struggle to find a better ball than that in Test cricket this year. Unbelievable. And Pokemane in the comments has already referred to that Yorker. Phew. Unreal. So 6 of 45 from Jasprit. Probably, in my view, well, no, but not probably about it, definitely the best all-format bowler in the world. Pacers.
Yeah, it's nuts. Somebody, in a response to one of our comments, I think, posted his averages. So not going to attribute this to whoever it was, but thanks on Twitter to whoever did do that. Was it 20.5 in tests, about 23 in ODIs, and down to 20 again in T20s. Like, you can't really... Yeah. Ask for more than that, and a serious case to be the best bowler in each one of those formats as well. Like it's not just that he's at the top; he might be number one in any given situation across those three formats. Like that's an incredible, it's an absolutely incredible player. It's unfair on everyone else to have someone that skillful,
and far better economy in every format as well than the average player.
Yeah,
particularly that was six and a half, I think it is in T20. Seeing a bowler's death is just insane.
Yeah. It was nuts. I mean, that spell before tea. I think what's amazing about it is the sort of range of skills. Like this isn't a guy who does any one thing exceptionally, and then other things not exceptionally. That's a bit of a weird way of saying it. Every single thing he does is absolute elite tier. He bowls really, really fast, and he bowls from closer than the average player as well. So it seems even faster than it is. He's got immaculate control over line and length. I mean, like. We all know if you follow T20 how hard it is to bowl Yorkers and how the game as a whole has moved away from them because of how hard it is to bowl those Yorkers, but not really for Jasprit Bumrah. Like, he nails them. You barely ever see him bowl a knee-high full toss or a half volley. It's always right in the block hole. He can bowl short. We've seen him bowl some really fiery spells, and he can also drag his length back from that full length and put it on the spot, as it were, in that channel of in the corridor of uncertainty, to use the cliche. And what's amazing is that when he does that, he's able to move the ball in and away at will. I mean, the way he got Joe Root out, it's phenomenal bowling. And obviously it follows on from another spell of amazing bowling in the previous match where he got MLBW. Root's thinking about that. Root's an amazing player. He's adapting on the fly and he's trying to come up with a plan to prevent that dismissal. And Bumrah sort of says, yeah, all right, mate, then. Well, I'll get you the other way. And does him on the outside edge, nick the slip. And what makes that even better? I mean, like people might think Root has got a weakness on that off-stump line with the ball moving in and away. That, I think, actually speaks to the strength of Joe Root, that really is the only way to bowl to him and to expect over a long enough period of time to have serious success. And there are so few bowlers who are able to do that. Bumrah is one of them, and he sets up one of the world's best players who's been in sparkling form for 3 or 4 years now. And does him like a kipper. And then, to follow that up with the Yorker is great. What I love about that Yorker as well, you can see when it comes out of his hand, Pope thinks that's going to be a half volley outside off stump. And he puts his foot across to drive it. But the amount of swing back in and the way Bumrah, because he gets backspin on the ball doesn't bounce where you think it will. It isn't a half volley and it keeps coming. And Pope falls over and he's literally doubled over at the point when he's trying to play the ball, head miles outside off stump. It's just an amazing, amazing skill from a pretty miraculous bowler, isn't it?
Yeah, incredible, incredible. And just does it all the time, basically. It's not a surprise when Bumrah plays like this anymore. And yeah, just consistently world-class in all three formats. Quick question on the chat. What's had more impact to this match so far? Jaiswal's 200 or Bumrah's bowling. I think actually, even though Bumrah's been amazing, you've got to say Jaiswal's 200 because it sets the whole game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's a great ton. I don't know if you saw Nakul Pandey's thread on Twitter about.
I did.
It's really good. I'm going to try and paraphrase some of it 12 years ago, Yashasvi Jaiswal moved 1,000 miles from rural Uttar Pradesh to Mumbai to try and become a cricketer. He was 10 years old when he did that. Moved in with his uncle in a suburb, but the travel was basically too far. So he moved and started working in a dairy shop in the middle of the city centre at 11 so that he could be a bit closer to training. He lived in the ground staff's tent of the cricket club he was playing at. His parents wanted him to come home, but he didn't. He was there for 3 years, from 11 to 14. So he was a child here. Eventually, he managed to get in with a coach called Jawala Singh, who had moved from Mumbai to Uttar Pradesh. And so I guess there was a kindred spirit thing there. And that guy became Jaiswal's legal guardian and sort of steered him through the Mumbai cricket scene. During this time, Jaiswal was selling street food to survive and make money. I don't think this was full time, but it sort of supplemented or enabled him to focus or keep his cricket dream alive. And eventually he broke through into the sort of Mumbai under 19 side and then into the India side, where he had that great World Cup and made his senior debut at 17. But it's a pretty insane story that this is a guy at 10 years old who had this vision. I mean, I don't know what you were doing at 10, but it wasn't that.
Doing 11 plus.
Incredible,
right? Like, just the most amazing story. And consistently, I mean, you see it in the IPL sometimes as well. These stories are just incredible, aren't they, of players coming through what is often a really, really challenging environment to break through into professional cricket. And the stories that you hear about are just insanely incredible and shows someone's will to succeed for him to go down that road. But also the fact that for every Jaiswal who's done that and succeeded, there's probably going to be a lot of people who have failed as well. And we can't forget that too. It's a lot of sliding doors moments in to get your break in pro sport, I think. And when you get that opportunity, you got to grab it with both hands. And he's certainly done that.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I was joking earlier on when, what's his name? Owen Morgan was saying he'd never seen Shoaib Bashir bat and he couldn't find it on the internet, as though all these county streams don't exist. And someone in our Patreon Discord was saying, well, how does he not know this? And I was like, Owen Morgan is a guy, like, he's a great cricketer, but at one stage in his career, he was probably three ducks away from ending up as a PE teacher. You know, it is those sliding doors moments, and everything has to go right for you. So that explains why Owen Morgan might not know that much about YouTube. But yeah, everything must have gone right.
And also, Morgan's probably one of the more astute people in cricket in recent years. But I mean, it also just goes to show perhaps the level of preparation that some commentators do as well.
Well, that is, I think that's undoubtable listening to the commentary in this test. Earlier in the day, I don't know if you want to talk about Anderson at all. 793 wickets for him now.
Does what he's good at, does what he does. And what is he, 41 years old? And still taking wickets, going for twos and over. Unreal. And there's been a few thoughts about whether England should have played two seamers or whether the Indian strategy of playing two bases compared to England's one was the right decision. Look, both, they're very different players, but Anderson and Bumrah are masters of their craft. Whatever they do, they truly are the outstanding player at what they do. And I don't think that we can say, okay, well, between them, they took nine for 90 odd. So definitely we should have played more seamers. I don't think it works like that.
No, yeah. But,
I think we've got to be. I mean, you only have to see what happened to Mukesh Kumar, which was. On a side note, it'd be interesting to hear some views on this in the chat or in comments. I don't quite get the hype around Mukesh Kumar. They seem to be kind of quite driven to shoehorn him into all three formats, but I'm not a massive buyer of him right now. I'm not saying he can't be a very good plan in the future, but I'm not a buyer currently. And just be interested to hear other people's thoughts on that.
Well, if you look at his career stats, he's not young. He's 30 years old, which Probably. And you'll know more about age curves than I do.
Yeah,
probably put some past the peak for a seam bowler. 41 first class matches, only 155 wickets in those. Quite a good average in that, 21.42. But in the other two formats, there's really not a lot to write home about. I mean, List A cricket averages 38, T20s averages 32 with an economy of 8.64. But yeah, to be playing all three formats does seem a little bit of a surprise. I joked on Twitter that it was cricket's equivalent of a ride along, having Mukesh Kumar in the team for this, but he's there, and it's sort of a testament to the ability of Jasprit Bumrah that you can basically just play another bloke and still comfortably be in command of this test. I'd be interested to hear from you on what you think about England. I mean, obviously they're not in a great position in the match, but I think our expectation before the series was that England would, you know, their goal should be to play well relative to England, rather than to play well relative to India. Do you think they've done a good job in this test? And maybe the first test was a bit of an aberration in terms of things going their way over and over and over again. And this is, you know, it's an okay performance, but they're up against a great team.
Yeah, I think when we spoke last week, I mentioned that a lot of the results of from the first test in terms of individual performances and then as a collective were towards the upper end of expectation for England. And we mentioned about Ollie Pope's four shots, and on an average day that derives eight wickets, for example. So divide is 196 by eight, you get like what, mid 20s or something like that, 24 and a half. And it showed that a lot of things did go right for England in that first test, and probably India lost a lot of the key margins, key moments as well. I think this is now a bit of mean reversion, more in line with expectation of bringing everything down from that first test into some form of expectation level. I think that the people who were thinking that India had a bad day yesterday when they scored 336 for six is pretty crazy. And I think that's there's a lot of mental baggage for people from that first game. A lot of what you might call gambler's fallacy, which is kind of roulette related or stuff where they say, oh, well, it's been 10 reds in a row, so it's got to be red again or got to be black again or something like that, you know? Well, actually, it's an independent event. And I think sometimes now, because of England's fight back in that first test, everyone's thinking they're going to go and do it again. And I think that it's extremely unreasonable to expect that. And I expect now with a 170 odd lead, I mean, back the whole day tomorrow, you're 500 in front. And that's what I would do if I was India, if I have the opportunity, is not to declare, just to grind England into the ground, because they will hate it. They will really hate a day in the field tomorrow. And get 500, 550 in front, maybe even bat a session on day four, and then give them some mammoth total, an unwinnable total to chase in five sessions.
And do you think India have got the talent relative to England's bowlers to do this? I mean, the pitch looks like it's holding up pretty well from a batting perspective.
Definitely. I mean, we've already seen Joyce, well, in this series, been outstanding, and it's outstanding. And another potential all-format great in the next 10 years, despite the fact that a few players such as Shubman Gill, Shreyas Iyer are struggling a bit of late. I think we know that they're good players at this level, at least, and in Gill's case, potentially could be a lot better in the future. And I think that, yeah, they just need one or two big partnerships, two century partnerships. They'll get that 350 odd to get 500 in front.
Yeah, so it's looking like an uphill task for England. We've been asked a few times. This came up on yesterday's podcast, and I'll ask it to you now. This is from over on Twitter. It's from Chintan. Is it wise for a team to rely so heavily on a single magisterial innings to win a match? Obviously, talking about Jaiswal here and India's batting performance overall. And I think there are some people that are concerned that Jaiswal's innings has papered over cracks in the rest of the India lineup. I mean, I guess the question is, to what extent do you agree with that?
I don't. Basically, it's not like this was pre-planned that we'd all rely on Dicewell to do it. Just like it wasn't pre-planned that England were going to rely on Ollie Pope to score 196 and basically win them the game in the last test. This stuff happens as a kind of a probability distribution based on your expected outcome. And I think it's pretty fair to say that Pope's 196 was probably a little bit further along the expected curve in terms of the unlikeliness of it than Jaiswell's 209, but both of them are extremely unlikely events. Just the same token, you could say that every other Indian batter not making over 35 was also different in expectation as well, below expectation. So I don't think I read too much into one guy scoring a load of runs at all, to be honest with you. And I think there's a comment in the chat, RM Barth, who says, "It's just me or without Jaiswell, India would have been 192 and in serious trouble." You can't look at it like that because you don't know what's going to happen if he gets out for a duck. People might bat differently. You can't say, okay, well, we'll just take his score off the scorecard and assume that England rolled India out for 200.
I think the other thing with this is, like, if you look at how cricket scores are made, team scores are made, usually it is an uneven affair. Like, very rarely do all the players in the lineup bat exactly to their average, and then that makes up the collective number of runs. If you look at look at any famous player, and I was doing this the other day, like how often they hit a century. Brian Lara, I think, was about one every seven innings. Sachin Tendulkar, similar, or it was one and eight, one in seven. Steve Smith's down at about 6.2, and I think Kane Williamson is the best in recent times at almost bang on six innings per ton. That means that five out of six times, these legendary players, these greats of their nation's history, are not registering three figures. And if the team's going to score, somebody else must be stepping in there. And it's really common. Like, just look back through some scorecards at how this works. It's really common for, like, two guys to get a ton and, like, the next best score to be 40. But the team score ends up being 400 and everyone says, "Oh, really well batted, lads." Like, it's an uneven game, as you say. And if you think about how innings are constructed as well, at the beginning of your innings, you're more likely to get out. It takes time to get your eye in. After you've been in for a certain number of balls, you settle down and you generally see batters' control improve and the number of false shots they play go down. The ball gets a little bit softer. Bowlers get a little bit tighter. That you've seen what they've got to offer from a batting perspective. The game is kind of designed like that. So from an India perspective, what I would be saying is, great, like, fantastic, we got that innings. It'll be someone else's turn at some point later in the series, and we'll rack up 400 again, because it looks like there are runs for the taking against this England bowling attack. I mean, we've seen twice now they've got 400 in three innings. It might be 1-0 in the series, but there's strong evidence, I think, developing that India are going to score quite heavily if we see pitches like this across the series.
Yeah, the only way that England can get back into this match, I think, is to take three wickets in the first hour tomorrow, because India's depth probably isn't great. Akshar's probably a little bit too high up at six. I'm not sold on KS Bharat at all as a test batter. And Ashwin adds depth, but it's not great depth overall. And then three bowlers, basically. So England really need those early wickets. And I think the only way India give any chance of England getting back in this game is by throwing a few wickets away early doors tomorrow.
Someone in the chat, Abhishek, has asked, what's Kohli's number of innings played for 100? It's 6.5. I had a look at that as well. So... that's really good, by the way. If you're getting a ton every 6.5 innings, and most people get a 50 for every ton as well, so you're doing all right. If they're the figures you're picking up, Dan, is there anything else you want to talk about? We've got to cut it a little bit short today because I'm heading off to football. But I'll give you a chance if there's anything in the game that you think we've missed.
No, I think I'm good. I'm looking forward to tomorrow to see how England bowl as well. The spinners took a little bit of treatment in the last few overs today, and they all went at a high economy in the first innings as well. So let's see how India play England spinners tomorrow. It'll be a fascinating battle, and we'll get to see over the next couple of days whether the true colours of Bazball and the situations against them.
Final thing then, Knackle and Biggie from Twitter have asked a very similar question, which basically comes down to, do you think England can chase any target in the final innings? So I won't ask that because I don't think they can chase any target, but what's the realistic top end?
Upper end of expectation, about 300.
Yeah, okay. So India got this game well in control. Thanks very much for watching and listening, everyone. If you could do us a favour, hit like and subscribe or follow if you're over on Spotify or iTunes, and leave a review. We're up to nearly 600 reviews on Spotify, so it'd be good if we can get the last 15 this week to tip us over into the 600s. Maybe we can catch James Anderson. That would be... We're about 100 behind James Anderson. So that's the next goal. Have a good one, Dan.
You got a podium finish on the sports podcast. We did. James Anderson.
We mentioned this yesterday. Yeah. We managed to finish third for the sports podcast awards, cricket podcast of the year, which is great. Edged out by podcasts with quite a lot of England caps between them. So we're kind of satisfied.
Fernando Alonso, anyway, podcast world.
Yeah, that's it. We're the Fernando Alonso of the podcast world. Thanks very much, Dan. Catch you soon. Cheers, we'll be back tomorrow with the wrap up of day three.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.